morning and welcome everybody to the Herb Doctor podcast. And we're delighted today to have a visitor all the way from Ballykeneely out in Connemara. I'm sure many of you may know her from her YouTube, which is Danu's Irish Herb Garden. So Terry, do you want to tell us about you, where you come from, how you came to be associated with this and live and experience the West of Ireland? That's a great place to begin. Yeah.
Okay. Well, my dad is from, I'm living on the home place. My dad was one of four brothers. He emigrated to England. He met my mum, whose family had all emigrated. And so I grew up in the northeast of England, in Stockton-on-Tees near Middlesbrough, and we would come over to Ireland during my childhood to visit the family, and we would just be let run wild, and it was just, I wish I could go back, it was the best time of my life. And it just, coming from a very industrial area of the northeast of England, where there was a lot of steelworks, there was a lot of shipbuilding, chemical industries, very industrial area, to come to Connemara, it was a stark difference, and it just touched something in me. It just woke something in my heart where I just yearned to be always in Connemara. So as soon as I grew up and got to a point where I was able to, you know, make that decision to move, I moved. So I've been in Connemara now since 1994. So that's over half of my life I've been in Connemara, back in my roots.
Okay. I actually share some of that story with you, because I spent 20 years in London and with that yearning, you know, for purple heather and mountains and terrain is a word we use a lot in herbal medicine. And it was something that I definitely, if any of you know the song Caledonia, or all of the emigrant songs, I would be in tears. Yeah, and coming back to Ireland every summer, I'd go home and I'd be miserable for 3 weeks. God. I would say to people, don't expect anything but, you know, sad, glum face for 3 weeks, and then I'll be back to my usual positive, optimistic, you know.
That's exactly it.
So, yeah, and it's part of your sinews, isn't it?
It's your bones and your blood. You know, when you walk along the Connemara roads at dusk, for example, when you're in that liminal space, it's as if all the walls, all the stones are the skulls of the ancestors, and the long stony walls just make me feel this is where I belong. Yeah. That's what I am part of. So, it's that terrible pain when you have to leave.
Exactly. Mm. Well put. So where did the connection with the herbal medicines and home treatment and sharing that knowledge, and where did the knowledge come from? How did you set about, you know, having all of this knowledge, or how did it happen?
Well, first of all, it happened because I think coming to Connemara from the northeast of England, you're in nature, you're let loose to run wild. So we're by the seashore, we're in the fields and the meadows, we're on the bog, and it's each little terrain is different. Mm. But each terrain would offer these amazing sensorial experiences, the smells, the touch, the feel. I mean, every time I smell mint when I'm outside, you know, if somebody crushes a little bit of water mint, it just takes me right back to my childhood. Same with the privet flowers. I'm straight back. Same with the taste of the fuchsia, you know, when you lick the honey from the fuchsia. Those experiences marked me in such a way that I just loved green. I just loved the green world. And I would go to parks and cemeteries in England to try to make that reconnection, but it was never the same. It was either weak or it was covered in dust, and it just did not have that same freshness and wild life energy that it does in Connemara. So that's what touched me first. And then my brother and I, when we were kids, we loved playing, you know, cowboys and Indians from all the movies that we saw. And we learned that for the American Indians, everything had spirit. So I think we became animists when we were young. And so that was the beginning for me, was respecting all the plants as being living, sentient beings. And then when I had my first child, I wanted my pregnancy and delivery to be as natural as possible. And that's when I began to look at, you know, natural paths other than the ordinary allopathic path. And following that, I wanted to learn about plants and learn about their medicinal properties. But at that time, when I was young, a young mother, where I lived in England, there was no mention of it anywhere. It was as if it was something that belonged to the past and had been left there.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't even know it was still possible. So, you know, to learn. So I had to find books, and that's how I started.
Okay.
With books.
And how old is your daughter now?
She's 39 now.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is she the daughter who's coming to visit you soon?
No, that was my next daughter, the second one. She was here at the weekend.
So all right.
We just had her here.
So how many children do you have? And grandchildren?
Just one.
Just one. Lovely. So you went from being a young mum with a yearning, but nothing visible. And in my book, Uprooted Medicine, one of the things that I highlight over the last 250 to 500 years has been the strategy of making herbal medicine invisible.
Mm. Yeah.
And you and I and everybody who's listening to us can bear witness to that.
Absolutely.
That's something. It's something you have to seek out and find.
Yes.
Okay. So when you went looking for it, what did you find?
Well, when I went looking, the first thing I found was a little book about pot herbs. So the culinary herbs that we can all grow in pots. And I didn't have a garden at the time. I just had a backyard, which had one raised bed and a couple of pots. So I was trying my best to grow things. And the first thing I ever grew as a herb, as a herbal remedy, was lemon balm. And I just remember the thrill and the delight of tasting that first cup of tea and that wonderful lemony smell and taste and the sense of getting home. That's what it was like. I'm home. I found the way. I found how to do it. So when I moved to Ireland and I had all this extra space around me, I had a proper garden. I was in a field. It was time to start building a herb garden then. So that was the first thing I did was I planted mint, which went crazy. I've now got almost a field of mint and the lemon balm, of course.
Yeah.
And then, you know, finding books until I found Judith. Judith Hode was my first teacher.
Absolutely. What a mentor to have.
Yeah.
Lemon balm is a great herb to start with if you just have pots or a very small garden. It's not nearly such a thug as the mints.
No, it's people do say it becomes invasive, but I think it must depend where you are. It doesn't become
absolutely
invasive for me.
But the other thing that they say is to plant it in a bucket, and it'll be with holes in the bottom, obviously.
Yeah.
It does like wet feet, so you don't, you know, you can limit the drainage. Every time I have planted it, it has gone over the rim of the bucket into the soil
and then
laughed.
Yes, of course.
So who do you think you are? You're not
it's
the boss of me.
It's very tough as well because, you know, where we are, we're on the wild Atlantic coast. We get a lot of salt winds all the time. I mean, constant salt on the winds and especially the storms. And yet everything seems to thrive and the lemon balm loves it.
Yeah.
As do all the Mediterranean herbs, actually. They seem to really enjoy it.
Yeah, because the air is warm, I guess. Yeah. So Judith was your first herbal medicine mentor. She was up in Donegal.
Yes.
Were you back in Ireland by this stage?
Yeah.
Because this was before the internet and before Zoom calls and all that.
Yes, it was, yeah. It's funny. Now you mention it, yes.
Yeah.
There's a thing that happens in Ireland called Beltane, as we know, is the beginning of summer. It's the month of May.
Mm-hmm.
And some NGO has linked it to the third stage of life. So there's lots of activities during Beltane for people in the third stage of life.
Yeah.
And I had just opened my health shop back in the early 2000s, and I'd heard that Judith was giving a talk somewhere, and I was a bit too young at the time, but I managed to wrangle my way onto this workshop that she led for a day somewhere, and that's what connected me to Judith.
Okay.
So we kept in touch after that, and then she sent me a poster to say she was running this week-long course, and that's how I went and I did the course as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first.
I haven't heard of Judith for a good while. Do you know?
I went to the Herb Feast this year and I met a lady. No, sorry, it was the Uisneach Festival. I went up to Uisneach this year and I met a lady there who recognised me from YouTube. And we had a lovely chat, and she was from Donegal. So I asked her, did she know Judith? And she said, Judith is still alive, still well, but she is in a nursing home now.
Oh, so that's okay.
A shame.
Right. And Kat is from Donegal, so, and we'll be going up to the festival up in Donegal in August. So maybe we'll find out where she is and go and pay a visit. That would be really nice.
That would be lovely.
So you did the course with Judith.
Yes.
And filled you with...
Filled me with inspiration. So I had my health shop and the herbal products I was selling.
Yeah.
Vogel, for example, or Bioforce, they offered a training course as well. So training with them. And then I found a teacher in County Clare that I studied with for 4 years.
And that was Carol Guyot.
Carol. And then I went and studied with, you know, you meet people as you're going along through life, and different people have met other people. And so Gina McGarry had been recommended to me by a couple of people. So I then decided to go and study with her. So I did another 2 years with Gina.
Yeah, and it is a small world, because Carol Guyot I met when I was in the UK, and she was in the National Institute of Medical Herbalists. And then when she moved to Ireland just before me, they set up the Irish Association of Medical Herbalists, which later became the Institute for Medical Herbalists. But since then, she's gone down a road of proving and shamanistic work to do with herbs. Mm-hmm. And she's written a lovely book. And I just can't think of the name of it as we speak. And also a book about pregnancy, which you wish you had when you were 30.
Of course, I would have done, yes.
I'm saying all of this just so that people know that although it's relatively invisible, there is a very rich network of people who are connected to each other through a whole variety of sources, and have undertaken training and fields of knowledge, you know, independent of each other, but also they have a core association or linkage or whatever. So, now you also studied kinesiology, I believe, which is fascinating. Do you want to chat about that?
Well, kinesiology is muscle testing, but it's not. But there is a lot more to it than just muscle testing, because the theory is that each muscle you test is linked to an organ in the body or an organ system, and whether your muscle tests indicates how the energy is flowing through that organ system.
Okay.
So, for example, if I was to test your latissimus dorsus, it would indicate how your spleen and pancreas was performing.
Okay.
So it's nothing to do with whether the muscles are strong or weak. It's how they behave when you're doing a specific test. So it's a very energetic type of modality, because you're basically working with energy within the body. So it's so we're looking at the electrical aspect, the chemical aspect. It's very holistic, so emotional, physical, structural, chemical, environmental. Everything that impacts on the person as a whole being would be assessed using kinesiology.
Great. I mean, I'm familiar with it because I often give people a prescription, and sometimes they might want a small sample of it for their kinesiologist to test whether it's good for the energy system within the body, which is fine by me, you know. But is this connection through meridian energy lines?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So it's something in common feature with acupuncture or shiatsu or any of those.
Yeah, the people energy who systems. Kind of invented it were both chiropractors, and they, I suppose, they went and studied acupuncture and the five elements philosophy, and then they brought that into the chiropractic practice.
Yeah, yeah.
But then they went different ways. One became purely for practitioners and medical personnel, and the other type, the systematic kinesiology, became for lay people to use.
Okay. And I mean, I think it's nice to go through these kind of parallel systems of medicine just to show how medicine has always been diverse.
Yes.
It has always been emerging. It has always been a blend of, you know, if you go to Tibet, you'll be influenced by Chinese herbal medicine and Ayurvedic medicine, because there's no borders. Plants have no borders.
Exactly.
And people have no borders.
No.
We now know, I was up at the Cage of Fields in North Mayo just a couple of weekends ago, and there were people there, I don't know, 3,000 to 5,000 BC, and there's evidence that they arrived by boat and there was trading, right? So that's...
I think it's, if you look at our ancient ancestors, they did, that was the only way they could move, was to travel by boat. And, I mean, look at everything they found at the Hill of Tara, the Barbary ape, and what's those blue beads, the blue, it's not lapis lazuli, it's something else. But anyway,
So people move. You know, in this day and age, to kind of not recognize that and to think this is a big now issue is to kind of ignore the whole of history.
Exactly.
Interestingly, which I didn't know before, the people who farmed then at that time, and it's the biggest expanse of managed agriculture in the whole of Europe. I can't remember exactly, but they have no genetic relationship to us. Something happened which totally wiped out that whole, the people of that system, or they moved. We don't know why. But isn't that fascinating?
Well, it probably ties in with one of the invasions of Ireland, because, you know, when, was it Caesar who came from Egypt?
Yeah, everybody, Scotia, his daughter.
All died in a plague.
Yeah.
So then apparently...
I think it might have been before that even. But I don't know. I'm not a historian. I just found this absolutely fascinating. If anybody is in the area visiting the Wild Atlantic Way, I highly recommend it. Yeah.
Yeah, I would recommend it as well.
So the kinesiology, your health food store, was that in Connemara?
In Clifton.
In Clifton.
It was in Clifton.
And then you got into the clinical practice, and when did you feel that your mission was to teach people?
Well, I thought I was a teacher before I opened the health shop.
Oh, okay.
So I am a teacher by profession anyway, and I love, my method of teaching is the Gestalt style, where you ask the student questions, so they've got to think about things. I don't like to just force feed. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I just think it was a natural transition to move from learning myself. I wanted to just share what I'd learned. Mm-hmm. And as a teacher, it just became more and more of a common sense thing to do, or a natural thing, a natural progression for me to do. So also, the way I was brought up was we had a very frugal lifestyle, and you had to make things last, you had to make do. And I learned in primary school as a 7-year-old how to make my own clothes. And then I was taught at home how to knit. And so I became quite proficient in providing for myself in as many ways as I could. We did our own decorating, our own wallpapering. Everything was done that we could do without recourse to outside help, unless it was absolutely necessary, like a plumber or an electrician or something. So that self-reliance has been built into me, and it would have been certainly the way my father would have been brought up and the way they lived in those days. So it just makes sense to also make your own medicine.
Yeah.
You know, cooking from scratch, I would never used anything processed or pre-prepared. I always cook from scratch, so why not make medicine from scratch? Mm-hmm. And when it's all outside, just waiting, just calling, you know, all these little plants are saying, here I am, I'm available to help. So it would be, it's like if somebody gives you a present, you're not going to just reject it. So
yeah,
you have to take advantage, and so there you go.
That's And it's accessible, it's abundant, it's free. We like that, don't we? Yeah. Practical.
And it easy to make, and it works.
A little effort, as with everything, but yeah.
With your body, it doesn't. It's not forced on you. The way you know, I always think of antibiotics. They're like the green berries. They go in, they scorch and burn, kill everything, and the plants go in and they're just gentle, and they nudge us back into homeostasis and rebuild and repair and restore.
Yeah, I describe them as gentle but firm.
Yes.
Okay, gentle people think, oh, they just have a little winchy bit of effect. Whereas I describe it as firm.
Yeah.
If I demonstrate it like on a herb walk or a teaching session, I say to somebody, a volunteer, obviously, without any medical problems of to do with mobility.
Yeah.
And I say, no, I'd like you to move from here to there, and I want you to do it in two ways. Mm. So I give them a sharp pull, yes, to get them from A to B.
Yeah.
It's only a meter away. Yes. Okay. And they go, okay, you're here now. And then they go back to where we started from, and I hold their hand and put my hand on their lower back, and I say, would you like to come with me? We're going in this direction over there, and I'd just like you to come with me. Mm. And I bring the point being that they end up in the same place.
Yes. Yes, yeah.
Because a lot of us learn by, you know this as a teacher, learn by experiencing, yes, something or visualizing it, yes, or, yeah. And the other way I describe it is the dandelion roots that grow through tarmac. Mm.
Mm-hmm. I know.
That's not gentle.
Definitely not.
That's very firm.
Yeah, and it takes a lot of courage, and it takes a lot of strength to, mm-hmm, how do we break through a metaphorical tarmac?
Yeah.
We need a bit of something.
A resilience, yes, you know, it's resilience and consistency, you know,
But also I think what I love about herbal medicine is it comes in, it does the job, and then you're free to go. Whereas a lot of people end up on allopathic medicine, which is there for life. And it's like, well, when are you going to be recovered? I remember a friend of mine being given some medication back in the early 2000s. And I said, oh, yeah, and how long will you be on that for? He said, oh, forever now. And I said, but surely it should make you get better.
Uh-huh.
And thanks be to God, touch wood, I've never had much recourse to allopathic medicine. But so I didn't understand that. I said, but why would you be on something forever?
I mean, as a doctor, I think, you know, I can point to a few things that you're on forever. Mm. You know, if, for instance, the insulin for diabetics and thyroid for people who have, where something needs to be replaced in order for the system not to be unbearably challenged, you know, that would cause more harm. Yeah. So there are some things that are necessary. So for many people, they're very surprised that I'm kind of going, yeah, that's a good choice for what you're experiencing and how your body needs support if there's a permanent organic structural damage.
Yes.
The irony for herbal medicine is that we see people at the end of the range that they're very ill because it's invisible, because we need more Terry Conroys.
Yeah. And Dilish Claires as well. And what's, I think, like for me, I'm a Virgo. I'm very, this is right, this is wrong, this is black, this is white. Mm. I need to be a little bit more open-minded about things, I suppose. It's like once I've made my mind up that I'm quite rigid. So I think what's lovely about you is that you have the foot in both camps, and you can explain a situation like that.
Yeah, and even for some medication, it might be necessary to get people out of a big pothole. Mm. Right. But then using the herbs to repair, restore, and rebuild their homeodynamics.
Yes.
Then they can gradually wean off. I think people are too quick to start medication, too quick stopping it. Mm. There's a gentleness that I think is gentle firmness. That's what I like. And abundance.
It's motherly, isn't it? It's like, you know, sometimes a mother does things that the child might not like, but deep down knows it's in their best interests.
Yeah.
So, a firm but loving mother is what the herbal medicine is.
Yes, and I think that's what we all need to be for ourselves when we grow up.
Absolutely, yeah. I think so.
Nurturing.
Yeah.
Nurturing, repairing, restoring, resilience. They're all the words I like. Mm, yeah.
Me
firmness.
Too.
Yeah. So, you're unusual that your belief in the restoration of herbs came before you had any health problems of your own.
Yes.
You first thought about it when you were pregnant, which is a normal thing.
Yeah.
Which has become more and more medicalized.
Yes.
You know, and in Ireland, the cesarean section rate is between 40% and 50%, and 50% consistently in some hospitals.
Yeah, it's terrific.
Check it
out,
guys.
Because not even that intervention, but... the opportunity missed by women to be empowered by that amazing, miraculous experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's the other thing I would say about this, which comes on to prevention, is one of the reasons is a lot got to do with people's reluctance to experience the pain, the dynamics of hospital, the medicalization of all of our lives, you know, in ways that it's crept into everything. It's nearly an expectation. In researching for the Uprooted Medicine book, I came to the conclusion from various reputable sources, these were not just my own idea, this is kind of fully referenced, that a logical or rational response to the obstetric needs would be represented by 25% of cesarean sections. Okay? And I'll acknowledge, happily acknowledge, that one of the major benefactors of the wave of, I call it post-Flexner medicine, but establishment medicine, you know, what's taken over the whole space of medicine, is obstetrics and pediatrics. We no longer expect women to die during childbirth. And quite a lot of that is due to medical interventions. And pediatrics, again, not entirely to do with the invention of antibiotics, but moving from the age of contagious diseases to do with hygiene.
Yes, I think
but it's adding to that, the safety of things like appendectomy and, you know, various interventions. So we have a lot to be thankful for.
Absolutely.
That we have the benefits of both. You know, and I think that's just amazing. We are so fortunate. So fortunate. We're blessed.
We're very blessed. We're very blessed. Like my husband often says, he's very happy living in this time because we have such options.
Yeah.
I just think we've got to be wary that we don't fall into a kind of a life of convenience. Oh, it's more convenient to have the baby on this day than when it might just turn up.
Yes.
Convenience, I think, is something we should eschew as not really...
But and the other thing is, because this isn't entirely down to the, I don't know why I'm defending the medical profession, but anyway, many women are older having their babies. We're biologically designed to have them somewhere between 18 and 28. And women are not educated to treat their bodies as being future nurturers of whole new people and the miraculousness of that and the strain that their body needs from the time they hit puberty with exercise and good food and unprocessed food. If you're healthy, 80% good food and you're young, 80% good food. So there's no problem with having a burger and chips on a Saturday night. And your birthday cake and whatever, because life isn't meant to be abstemious.
No, exactly. Right? I agree.
But there's such a need for women to be have good iodine levels, good natural folic acid levels from the point is also you can talk about how you see prevention.
Well, I think it's just that self-responsibility, eating well during the 80-20, whatever your state of health is, it should always be 80-20, I think, because you know, if you try to be abstemious, you're just going to set yourself up for a fail and a fall, and you will fall into a bad habit. So, you know, have a bit of fun for sure with your food or with whatever, have a drink now and again. But I think one of the other things for me is that people are so happy to just hand over their personal sovereignty. I'm about to have a baby, for example. Oh, I'll leave it up to the midwives and the doctors instead of preparing by understanding what's going to happen, what you're likely to experience, what could go wrong, what you can choose to have happen, all of those things, and to prepare the body, because you do go you go through a labor which is physically hard work. And you know, I was very lucky, both my deliveries were, I wouldn't say they were painful, and they were fairly reasonably short, but it was bloody hard work. And I never expected to be quite so hard. But that's, you know, I think, and so if you don't know what to expect, the fear comes in and then your oxytocin stops and you get tense. If you know what to expect, even if it's something you don't want to happen, at least you're mentally prepared. So I just think personal responsibility for every aspect of life is what would, you know, lead to a healthier, happier life overall.
I think you hit a very important point to do with health sovereignty. Mm-hmm. We're not in touch with the health that's available to us in the hedgerows. Mm-hmm. So how would you kind of envision, you know, somebody has been following your education courses, linked into your YouTube, because you also do educational courses.
Yes,
do you want to talk about that for a few minutes?
If anybody goes to the website, which is danusirishherbgarden.com, there is the Hawthorne Academy is within there. So I have an affinity with Hawthorne. It's one of my plant allies. It's a mm-hmm. it's a friend. So in the Hawthorne Academy, you can do an introduction to herbal medicine course, which is a very basic introduction. It helps people learn how to make basic medicines such as tinctures and teas and whatever, and just introduces people to the idea that we are in relation with these plants. We share our DNA with them, and that they are here to help us become the best we can be physically and mentally and emotionally. And what I think is very important is when you start to make your own medicine from the hedgerows or from your back garden or from a piece of waste ground if you're in a city, you find that medicine, you make it, and then you begin to look around at the environment and you begin to see what's going wrong. And then you might take a step to prevent litter being left or a place mm-hmm. being used as a fly tip. And then you become engaged with your environment. And that is a good thing because you begin to interact. That's positive for you and it's positive for the environment as well because you're taking some action. So what was the question again about?
Connecting to nature.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's part of engagement and your courses.
Yes.
So there's an introductory course.
And then there's a course for women, which is, the course for women is basically looking at the maiden, mother and crone, but on an energetic level as well. So I think those are key moments in our lives when we hit puberty, when we become a mother and when we go through the menopause. These are power points. And, you know, girls are embarrassed and ashamed that they're having a period. Women think having a baby, they just have an appointment in the hospital and they pop out a baby without understanding everything else that's going on. And then women are, you know, it's bad enough to have a period. It's worse not to have one when you stop menstruating, because then you're old and you're past it and you're just a waste of space. And I think that's a very wrong mentality to take up. We need to take up an empowering mentality, mm-hmm. which is once we hit cronehood, we are a force to be reckoned with. But if you believe all the media hype, you're going to feel, oh, you know, I'm over, I'm done with, I'm finished. And it's the absolute opposite.
Yeah,
it's when you really come into your power.
Terry isn't alone in this. Lots of women have actually been writing books about this and exploring all of this.
Yeah.
And it's about coming into a power of being grounded, which in a way, during the fertile years, your body is constantly preparing for something else. And it's a roller coaster.
Mm.
And when you go through the menopause, which for some women can be, I'm not underestimating the difficulty that people have. Mm-hmm. For the vast majority of women, herbal medicine is very, very useful. It solves the problems. And then even if they need HRT to begin with, or I call it hormone therapy, it's not replacement therapy mm-hmm. because we're not supposed to have estrogen.
Yes.
Estrogen is a double-edged sword, you know. Well, your bookcase cat doesn't like estrogen.
No.
Too much of it. Too much of a good thing can be a bad thing.
There's a little ghosty over there.
I know, yeah. So for some women, if their symptoms are so severe, mm-hmm. I start them on hormone therapy, mm-hmm. but not intending for them to be still on it 10 years later because the increased incidence of breast cancer is still there mm-hmm. on prolonged use. Progesterone has quite a lot of side effects of its own, but it's not needed.
No.
You know, so this goes back a long way for me in terms of why a lot of prescribed medicines that I was prescribing was not rational.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So but by doing this is where I use collaborative medicine,
mm-hmm.
right? Where you collaborate with the best of both.
Yeah.
Even for very severe symptoms, most women are off the HRT after somewhere between 6 and 18 months, not 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And for most women with mild to moderate symptoms, it's the herbal medicine is all they need.
That's all they need.
Along with all of the hydration and be eating healthy food and all of that, it's almost impossible. Using herbs otherwise is like... it's like trying to do something effective with your hands tied behind your back.
Yeah, I agree. You have to have the dietary changes and the lifestyle amendments and mindset as well.
Yeah, but they're not as difficult as people think, and they're much more obvious and less expensive than all this processed food.
I mean, processed food seems to be cheap, but what is the ultimate price that people are paying?
You know?
Yeah, and I think, but I think going back to the three PowerPoints, motherhood as well, it's just it's just something that's done. People have forgotten it's an amazing miracle. You've actually created and grown and delivered a brand new life, a whole new human being. And who gets all the presents? The baby. Mother is not really looked at. Everyone's, isn't the baby lovely? And it is lovely and it's wonderful. But the mother has just gone through this incredible experience that only women can go through.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of sidelined, really. It's not acknowledged anymore. And it comes with its own hormone disruption and a lot of emotion. So I think women need a lot of assistance and help and support when they become new mothers.
Yeah.
Except they're supposed to be able to just get on with it and know what to do, but it's not
like that, is it?
So that's what that course does. It acknowledges all those issues and it creates rituals for people.
Yeah, it's just coming to me that it's not just transformative event in women's lives. It's actually a metamorphosis. Where one body becomes two.
Yes.
Like the caterpillar changing into a butterfly.
Mm-hmm.
This is a woman who has changed. Changes to the immune system are phenomenal.
Yes, and the brain and everything.
And absolutely.
And when you think always, how hard it's a miracle. Is for a sperm to actually fertilize an egg, the odds against it ever happening, it is an absolute miracle.
Yeah. And that's when men need to man up and realize how important they are. Where fathers are involved, it's very important for them to know their own strength in being a man and being a supportive part of this whole thing, or partner, of course. So are there other courses? There's the introductory course and then the women's course.
Yeah, so, and then there's making a flower essence and finding a plant ally, which is moving into the shamanic, more energetic relationship with plants, which I think, to me, is important because it makes learning about plant medicine more rounded. You know, you're not just taking it as a thing, as you would an allopathic remedy. You're working with an ally, with a friend, with a relation. And Michael Pollan, my husband was telling me, he's a researcher, he's a scientific researcher. He's just published an article explaining that plants have 20 senses that can now be recognized. So they can see, they can hear, they can sense. I don't know what the other senses they have are because I haven't read the article yet. But we know they can see because they have the same cells that we have in our eyes, the rods and the cones, on their stems and leaves. And we know they can hear because if you play them a recording of caterpillars that munch on them, they will release chemicals and pheromones or whatever to repel those insects or to call in maybe a parasitic wasp that will kill off those pests on them. So they're very, very clever and they do lots of things that we presume only humans can do. So
amazing.
I think if you can communicate on that energetic level with a plant, it enhances your experience when you're making medicine, when you're taking medicine, and when you're helping your family as well. You know, it's much more holistic and rounded.
And in terms of academic medicine, this follows the Goethean, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right, Goethe, yeah. Sciences, Goethe, fine, G-O-E-T-K-E,
yes.
Yeah, of experience. And in that school of learning herbal medicine, you sit with a plant and you draw it and you smell it and you watch it grow and you watch it mature and you acknowledge your own feelings.
Yes.
So it's a two-way relationship. Yeah. Yeah. So we've taken science as being a very reductive experience rather than a curiosity.
Yes, I was going to say
on each individual. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, science used to be natural philosophy.
Yeah.
And it was all, everything at once, but then they began to compartmentalise. So
that
just definitely reduced things.
In the same way that current establishment medicine isolates the heart from the lungs and the gut from nearly the throat and the colon, the large bowel. And you're like... treating them all like compartments, and the brain, of course, we know very, 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 very little about, and yet it's the powerhouse of a powerhouse of energy. But you know what I think? I think the digestion is core, but I think the heart is the heart of the matter.
Yes, I think so. Yeah, because I mean, the heart, they're discovering new types of cells in it all the time. It's got neuronal cells and everything. And I think when you talk about the gut and digestion, it's also what we digest, not just physically eating, but what we digest through reading and viewing and listening and, that sort of thing as well.
And this is where I would encourage people to tune into your YouTubes, because that would be soothing and connecting and, kind of restful. That if we keep tuning into fearful things on social media, that we can train our social media. We're not passive when it comes to social media. And if we keep putting in wars and of any era, and then that's what they serve us up.
Yeah, right? And that's what you digest.
And that's what we digest. So
it's like if you physically eat something that's rotten, it's not going to do you any good.
No.
So be careful what you watch and listen to.
That brings me back to some of the local herbs like thyme. I have great difficulty growing thyme, that it comes back each year in a perennial
I can have it for maybe, it will come back after 1 year, but it doesn't last for very long. So maybe it's a short-term perennial.
Yeah, and do you have a way of propagating it? If you layer it down and pin it down with a hair grip or whatever and put some soil over it.
Yeah, you can do that with rosemary as well.
Yeah. I find that most successful with sage.
Yeah.
Sage is very, takes madly. Yeah. So I think propagating the herbs and everything is sometimes what you read in the books is not what you actually experience.
No, because to me, I find a lot of gardening books are all focused on the southeast of England, where it's a very, very different climate to here.
Yeah.
And then it's the same with permaculture. A lot of permaculture is about, New Zealand and places in Australia.
Yeah.
And then you try to get those bits of information and apply it to the west of Ireland, and you just have to do it through experience.
Oh, my other way of describing how clever plants are is with ribwort, which is plantago, either lanceolata or majora. Mm. So there's a thin leaf and then a much bigger palm-sized leafed one. Yeah. That's if you're in a nice field. Mm. But if you're by the seaside...
There's a sea plantago. There's a marine plantago as well.
But they've got shiny leaves.
Yeah.
With a
different shape. There's stags, kind of like a stag's antlers.
Yeah. To protect them from the salt.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but the other thing I've noticed, I didn't read these anywhere, is that if they have a nice generous place to live, they'll grow a foot, maybe even bigger. If it's somewhere that's repeatedly mown, and dandelions do the same as this.
Yeah.
If it's repeated, there's hardly any stem. Yeah. They quickly shoot up, flower, and go to seed before the... And they nearly know how often the lawnmower is coming.
Oh, they probably... Well, of course, why wouldn't they? They've got 20 senses. And But it's like...
They're intelligent.
Of course. Right. Look at the number of orchids who pretend to be the female insects of the pollinators, yeah. whether it's a bee or whatever. And the poor male goes in there thinking he's about to have a good time, and he's not. Because it's just a trick.
Yeah.
So how clever is that to mimic other species?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. And then because we co-evolved with plants... Mm. We have a lot of accumulated knowledge mm-hmm. of which ones to take for particular things and how much is too much
yeah.
And to titrate it with the plants in your local area.
Yeah.
For the local people, the terroir.
Yeah.
That's a lovely word, isn't it? Yeah. Terroir.
Well, you know, when really they talk nice. About grapes and things growing, they have yeah. to be in a certain terroir. And I think, well, it's the same with,
yeah.
you know, Meadowsweet for me in my garden will be completely different to Meadowsweet 10 miles up the road because yeah. it's a different terroir. It's the terroir I live in, so it's going to have a more affinity with my body because we've both experienced yeah. the same weather, the same...
And these are nuances.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
But they drive pharmacologists, and especially academic pharmacologists, they drive them crazy. They want them all to have exactly the same, you know, yeah. no matter where you are.
I know,
and this is kind of like... This
but that's what's so beautiful about nature.
Real.
It cannot really be compartmentalized. It is what it is, and it's unique and living and changing and growing, which is what we all should be doing
yeah.
instead of being put into boxes and repressed. I was just reading yesterday a teacher who sent her children out to play one afternoon at the end of the day, and it was sunny. She said, oh, off you go and play. And they're going, what do you mean? They didn't know how to go out and play
mm-hmm.
because they were just so used to having every moment of their lives regulated. Now it's time for this, now it's time for that. They didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So she stopped teaching them for a couple of weeks and they learned how to play again.
Right,
so,
yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's important
yeah.
to have that freedom of expression, whether you're a plant or a child or
yeah.
a grown-up even.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else that you want to? I think we've covered most of the things we were thinking we might get around to.
Yeah, I think so. I think one thing I'll just finish with saying is that, you know, a lot of people take things extremely literal.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say Meadowsweet is wonderful for stomach aches, for example, they might think it's only going to do that. They don't realise plants have many, many actions and many ways of working within individuals. The relationship between the plant and the person is so individual
mm-hmm.
that there are guidelines, there's millennia of experience that we can draw on, but then it's a unique personal experience at the end of the day. And because I have a lot of viewers who are all across America, which is very many different zones of climate zones.
Mm-hmm.
People in Canada, people in America, Australia and New Zealand. So a large amount of people. So what I say I'm doing is not what I would expect them to be doing because they live in a different climate. So to be relaxed, to go with the flow, to work with the plant instead of trying to mm-hmm. make everything exactly the same as what I do or what they've read or what the book says,
mm-hmm.
like you were saying earlier about yeah. the books.
And again, through the history, because we have a colonial history,
mm.
In Ireland, you know, we've had a history of being colonised for 600, 800 years. I think we're the longest
yeah.
culture, territory, colonised by the same coloniser.
Mm.
Over this length of time.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody else has their own experience of being colonized, unless you've been an imperial force forever.
Yes.
Which very few cultures have been.
Mm.
So we have a lot of interchange with North American herbs
mm-hmm.
Because of the shared history.
Yes.
We also have, as well as European herbs
yes.
and even by the spice routes, the Silk Road all yes. the way through, right down. I call what I do and what you're experiencing through your training, but you can identify with it or not as you wish,
mm-hmm.
I call what I do classical herbal medicine, not Western herbal medicine. Because Western herbal medicine is west of what?
Yes.
It depends on where you are.
I suppose west of the Middle East, I suppose, because the Arab world,
yeah,
the East, the Arab world, and then the West, I suppose, is what was meant.
Well, I think from the time that they started describing it as Western herbal medicine, it was west of China and India, because our roots are actually in Persia,
yes,
going up to Arabia. The classics, mm-hmm. Roman diaspora, colonialization, which never made it to Ireland, which yes. makes us again quite unique. Mm-hmm. But then the colonization of America, mm-hmm. the boats, the slave boats going across, they yes. needed something to bring back. They brought back the herbs. Mm-hmm. The same with the countries from Spain to South America,
yeah.
All influenced by Christianity. It's all in the uprooted medicine.
Yes.
So all of that means that this current wave of industrial medicine is in keeping with the Flexner Report in yes. North America
yes.
in the early 1900s. And this is now spreading globally.
Yes, it's another right? form of colonialism.
It's another form of colonialism. Yeah.
But it's your personal sovereignty this time, your health.
So each of us taking our personal sovereignty into our hands, into the hands of an abundance of nature wherever you are.
Yes.
Okay, so what we're both saying is to take the references near to where you are.
Yes.
And this is not to take away from the diversity of, you know, of people going from Ireland to England, from yes. the Chinese diaspora. There's always a mix and a meld. This isn't to say this is our medicine and that's your medicine. Mm. It's always been mixed and matched.
Mm-hmm.
But to choose the one that resonates
yes.
with you and as much possible as local herbs,
course,
I would say.
Then it's fresh.
Yeah, and we were saying earlier about it all depends as well on if you're a professional herbalist on what herbs you can resource.
Yes.
And I have no way of resourcing purple loosestrife except to harvest it myself, which I've actually started doing each year. And there are lots of other herbs that have been, like ivy. Ivy actually has very good references for clinical studies.
Mm-hmm.
But even though I trained in the UK with a degree in Middlesex University, we weren't taught to use ivy. Right? And there is nothing more abundant in Ireland than ivy.
There's so many, when I look at all the wild plants, I mean, agrimony, there's so many that you don't yeah. see on a shelf in a health
yeah.
shop.
Yeah, we do have access to agrimony. Yeah,
there's such a narrow. It's like a narrow, very narrow spectrum when you think of all.
Yeah,
primrose, cowslip. I mean,
daisies
even. Yeah. I mean, the most common little thing that we can all recognise. And then you know, in fact, every herb I can think of, woundwort. You know, along with the purple loosestrife, they come up around the same time.
Mm.
Rose bay willow herb.
Oh,
they're
yes,
all phenomenal,
that's lovely.
And yet
yeah.
they're just not really...
That's just not to leave the men out of it. That's particularly good for the prostate gland.
Yeah. I've forgotten that.
But the hawthorn, I think we would both have a great affinity for hawthorn.
Yes,
and it's hawthorn, elderflower, nettles,
yeah.
Burdock, plantain.
Yeah.
Well, there's so many that are so... Fluorshock, which is the Irish word for plentiful abundance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, well, which herb should I start with? It's like, well, you could start with nettle because that's prolific and it's for everybody at every stage of life. And so I change my favourite herb from as we move along the hedgerow. Oh, this is my favourite. Actually, no, I've just got to my favourite. No, this one isn't the nuts. Because they're also amazingly wonderful and have so many actions to help us. And that's another danger, I think, that people fall into. Oh, you know... plantain is for wounds and
allergies, yeah. Digestion, allergies.
No, I was just going to say, people see a plant as an allopathic remedy. So we
yes.
can use plantain for foreign objects, foreign bodies and wounds. We can use nettle for...
iron.
Yes. We can use hawthorn for the heart. But they do so much more.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
and not to compartmentalize them as a herb for this or that or the other.
And then when you blend them together,
yeah,
they have both additives and synergistic actions.
Yeah, of course.
Dano, we could go on all day.
I know, it's great to have a herb.
I know, but I think we better stop.
Okay.
Well, but this isn't the end of the conversation, because I plan to go out into Paddy Keneally.
Yes, and I will welcome you out to my podcast.
Exactly.
On
Substack. Yeah.
That'd be wonderful.
So I
will say this book is incredible, because it's actually millennia of knowledge and wisdom that's been lost by the wayside, and you've uprooted it and brought it back into the 21st century, and it's just a wonderful aid, and it explains so much and then steers you in the right path, I think.
Mm.
I think everyone who wants to work with herbal medicine should have a copy of this.
And I think it's collaborative. It's about the best of both, because we live in a world of diversity and adversity and dualism.
Mm-hmm.
And I can never understand that. From childhood, I could never understand that.
I know. It's just a few small people who prefer it like
this,
that.
This was sparked by the question, why did they not teach me herbal medicine in medical school? And look what happened.
Yeah. But that's a good question to
ask. It's a book. But it's not a book until it's read.
Mm-hmm.
So, so I'd like to thank everybody for listening. I'd like to thank Terry for coming and joining us. And I would love to hear comments and any refer you to this podcast. And if there's any subjects that you want us to particularly talk about, there, that would be really good. Mm-hmm. So let us know. Anything you want to say, Kat?
I have no mic.
Oh, okay. You can. I'll say it for you.
Just say thanks. Thank you for our lovely guest.
Yeah.
And we hope that you'd love to come back to us again.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And you're going to go out on a jolly.
Yeah. To celebrate the herbs.
Yeah. That'd be great.
Great.
And we're going to put it up. We'll put it up on the both podcasts. So.
Great.
Yeah, all good.
Okay.
And Terry's is available on YouTube and
the website Danu's Irish Herb Garden and on Substack.
Substack.
All Danu's Irish Herb Garden.
Okay. Great. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you so much. Lovely to talk.